Hey everyone, this is Derek Brose with the Conscious Resistance Network, and today we're going to talk about a recent article I wrote for The Last American Vagabond. It's actually a two-part series that you might have heard me discussing with Ryan of The Last American Vagabond, but I wanted to give you a little bit more of my specific perspective on both parts of this article, and in case you haven't seen it, I want to invite you to read it for yourself. Before we do that, though, I would like to invite you to bookmark theconsciousresistance.com. Guys, this is the home of all my content that I've been broadcasting for almost a decade now at theconsciousresistance.com. You can find all about what we do here at the About page. You can download my books for free. You can check out all of our documentaries we produced over the years. You can see interviews, news reports. You can see all my speeches. You can check out the various podcasts, including Freethinker Radio, which I host on the FM radio in Houston, and my more recent podcast, The Activation Podcast. Finally, you can also see all of the episodes of The Pyramid of Power, starting with Season 2 and Season 1, if you click here at theconsciousresistance.com, and of course, you can do that at thepyramidofpower.net. And if you want to support us on social media, some of you are probably watching on Minds or on Hive or on BitChute or on Odyssey, on Rockfin, DLive. I'm thankful to all of you. Thank you for following me on Telegram, and to those of you who support me on Patreon. If you want to do so, this is your last month to do so. I'll be ending my relationship with Patreon, PayPal, etc. beginning in 2022. You'll have to find different ways to support me, including with a new PO box that we'll be announcing soon. So let's go ahead and get into it, guys. This article is coming from The Last American Vagabond. If you don't know, you can click over here to Bros Series. You can see this is, you click that link and it'll take you to all of my articles. You can find my series, my three-part series I wrote last year on Bill Gates, and this new series called The Great Narrative and the Metaverse. I did an interview with Ryan, as I mentioned, on part one, which is called A Dystopian Vision of the Future. And I'm going to mention a bit from this article. I don't want to rehash too much of what Ryan and I already talked about, and I'll include that link, but it is important to get into the details here in case you aren't familiar with this. And the second part, which I published last week, is called Will the Metaverse End Human Freedom? And these are both very, very important, I think, for you to understand what we're facing here in regards of the metaverse, our potentially transhumanist technocratic future that these insane psychopaths at the World Economic Forum and various governments around the world would like us to have. You've heard of it. You'll own nothing and be happy. And for those who are watching on screen, the gentleman we're showing is Klaus Schwab. Side note, contrary to what some of you might have heard on some really crappy conspiracy blogs out there, Klaus Schwab has not been arrested. Neither has Bill Gates. And Klaus Schwab was just speaking at the World Economic Forum in Dubai with the heads of the United Arab Emirates, speaking about this next stage of the Great Reset agenda, which they're calling the Great Narrative. Also, I want to shout out to James Corbett, who covered this article recently as well. Thank you, James, for highlighting my work. On November 11th and 12th, the World Economic Forum held a two-day meeting called The Great Narrative in Dubai to discuss long-term perspectives and co-create a narrative that can help guide the creation of a more resilient, inclusive, and sustainable vision for our collective future. Well, they fit four buzzwords in that one sentence: resilient, inclusive, sustainable, and collective. Another side note, I'll try not to get too lost in this video here, but James has done some recent discussions really mentioning how these people pervert words, right? And this idea of being inclusive or sustainable or resilient, which are all good things, I would think, are now being co-opted by these people. And whenever people in our circles, let's say broadly, hear that word sustainable, they're like, oh no, United Nations, you must be falling for UN Agenda 2030 propaganda. Instead of just taking the word for its truest sense of its, you know, its meaning. Same thing with inclusive and resilient and these kinds of things. That's language that is commonly used in the permaculture community. And some people in the permaculture community might buy into some of these narratives, but without a doubt, it's definitely not everybody. The point here is that they do use these trendy buzzwords, and I make this point a few times in the article. They use these trendy buzzwords to try to get people who are only casually paying attention, who don't really know the deeper agendas, to think, oh, wow, yeah, this sounds great. A bunch of rich people and politicians are talking about how to help make our planet better. I mean, what are you guys talking about? What's so horrible about this? And as we'll discuss as we get deeper, that's far from the truth of what they're doing. So it's a co-opting of the language. So the World Economic Forum gathered futurists, scientists, and philosophers from around the world to dream up their vision of how to reset the world and what it might look like in the next 50 years. Imagine what it might look like. And once again, Klaus Schwab and his people will be publishing a new book like they did last year, COVID-19 and the Great Reset. This one's coming out in January next month, called The Great Narrative. And I think as much as we don't really want to have to read it, it's probably going to be important to see what they're, you know, what they're pushing for, because they're talking about not only Agenda 2030, but several times in this conference, The Great Narrative. I sat here and watched 4 or 5 hours worth of videos just to do this article. They talk about what will things look like in 50 years. So you can tell that they are mapping out and how to design the future the way they want. So the release of The Great Narrative book, though, it's going to come at the same time as the World Economic Forum's meeting in Davos, Switzerland, from January 17th to 21st, and their focus is working together, restoring trust. They have put a lot of effort into this idea of restoring trust because they realize that people's trust in these various systems, economic systems, medical systems, healthcare systems, government in general, is broken, and it's been broken by these people, right? Of course, now they're like, how are we going to restore trust? One note I'll mention, I heard that the World Economic Forum may be canceling their meeting. I saw that reported in one mainstream outlet, and then I saw some other conspiracy outlets. I saw Hugo Talks, who does some great work, do a report on an article from Sweden or something, and I don't think it's accurate, saying that Davos has been canceled because they're receiving death threats and people are taking this as a sign as they're afraid of us, we're waking up. I think they're just rescheduling it because now they're talking about this Omicron stuff, and they're like, oh, we can't gather with Omicron going around, and they might reschedule it in person. Doesn't mean it won't happen. So according to the World Economic Forum, this meeting will focus on accelerating stakeholder capitalism, harnessing the technologies of the fourth industrial revolution, and ensuring a more inclusive future of work. Again, the message is essentially the same one the World Economic Forum and their partners have been calling for since the beginning of the COVID-19 event: a great reset of the economic, governmental, healthcare, food production, and technological systems which underpin all of human life. The Great Reset was announced, as most of you will know, by Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum in June 2020. That's when we saw the media starting to use that term. We saw England's Prince Charles. We saw Klaus Schwab, Antonio Guterres of the UN, Kristalina Georgieva of the International Monetary Fund, and all these other technocrats come together to announce it's time for a reset of capitalism, right? And long-term readers and researchers also know that the World Economic Forum was involved in the exercise event 201. They partnered with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the John Hopkins Center. So lots of connections. Those are the people pushing the Great Reset. Now they're ready to push the Great Narrative. And what the heck is this Great Narrative about? Well, let's talk about that for a moment. This is, I think, an interesting aspect of this whole thing. I know James, again, put out a good piece in the last couple of days discussing the importance of narrative and how they are shaping narratives around us all the time. And that's something that more and more of us have become aware of, that these would-be rulers, the powers that wish they were, as I like to call them, they definitely understand psychological narratives, philosophical narratives, and how to use the media and all of their various infrastructure to get us to believe whatever the heck they want. And that could be narratives about the world around us, narratives about why this war is good, or why this virus is bad, or why you should hate this person and love this person, right? It's all about narratives and directing our attention and our awareness. It's a very powerful form of control and manipulation. And many forms of media, narrative is defined as a, quote, way of presenting connected events in order to tell a good story, or the telling of related events in a cohesive format that centers around a central theme or idea. In our daily lives, a narrative can be seen as the way we as humans come to understand the world around us. We form narratives or stories about our political realities and our interpersonal relationships. And to get even deeper, there's this idea of the grand narrative, or a meta-narrative, which is from philosopher Jean-François Lyotard. It says that a grand narrative functions to legitimize power, authority, and social customs. And this is what the Great Reset is trying to achieve. Again, the authoritarians know that they need a narrative to unite the people behind, and this is to legitimize their power. And what I'm saying here is that the World Economic Forum's call for a great narrative, it should be seen for what it is, an attempt to displace all other visions of the future of humankind by placing the World Economic Forum and their partners at the heart of a narrative which paints them as the heroes of our time. And this fits perfectly with the technocratic philosophy that has been employed by Klaus Schwab and the people that he associates with. And this is also part of the public-private partnership vision of the future, where government and private businesses and philanthropies use their wealth, influence, and power to design the future they believe is best for humanity. And in actuality, the technocratic philosophy merges with a transhumanist mindset that sees humanity as limited, flawed, and need of augmentation by technology in order to accelerate what Klaus Schwab calls the fourth industrial revolution. That's a big part of this. Ryan did include this nice clip here of Klaus Schwab talking about this. So I'm going to play this. It's about a minute and a half, and we'll continue our look at the great narrative in the metaverse.
What the fourth industrial revolution will lead to is a fusion of our physical, our digital, and our biological identities.
The difference of this fourth industrial revolution is it doesn't change what you are doing. It changes you. If you take a genetic editing, right. Just as an example, it's you who are changed. Yeah. And of course, this has a big impact on your identity.
Yeah. It is important to use the COVID-19 crisis as a timely opportunity. So people assume we are just going back to the good old world, which we had, and everything will be normal again in how we are used to normal, in the old fashion. This is, let's say, fiction. It will not happen. The cut which we have now is much too strong in order not to leave traces.
All right, so again, thank you to Ryan for putting that clip together. So let's talk a little bit about what was actually discussed at the Great Narrative. It was a two-day meeting in Dubai with Klaus Schwab, and he sat with different officials from the United Arab Emirates. We have Mohammed Abdullah Al-Gharawi, Minister of Cabinet Affairs for the UAE, in a panel titled Narrating the Future. And here's some quotes that just give you a little bit outline of what they're discussing. Klaus Schwab said, "We are here to develop the great narrative, a story for the future. We meet today to develop a great narrative." He says, I quote His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, Vice President and Prime Minister of the UAE and ruler of Dubai, when His Highness said, "The future belongs to those who can imagine it, design it, and execute it. We are now here to imagine the future, design the future, and then execute." So they're very much, I mean, this is, you don't have to be a crazy conspiracy theorist to see that a bunch of rich people from various industries and sectors are coming together and talk about how they're going to design our future. And maybe some people will say, well, somebody needs to be driving this ship, right? Maybe the smartest, brightest should be directing things. And of course, that's the literal definition and the goal of things like technocracy, is that you put the technocrat, the kind of rulers and those who manage the technology as well as the scientific elite to make decisions for the rest of us because we just can't figure it out. And I refuse to accept that, and I hope you do as well. I hope you believe in your own sovereignty and your own ability to make choices in your life. Minister Al-Gharawi spoke about the public looking for a way for a great transformation. And he said all the above buzzwords. We're going to skip that. But I want to get to some more specific things about what they're talking about. The fourth industrial revolution. The metaverse, they also discussed. That's in the next article we'll talk about in just a moment. He talks about the fourth industrial revolution. Again, this is a project that, just like the Great Reset, was announced by Klaus Schwab. But this was announced way back in December 2015. And he released a book about it as well. And it, without sugarcoating it, it is the digital panopticon. It is the surveillance state of the future, where surveillance is everywhere and humanity uses digital technology to alter our lives. That's what they're trying to push us towards, right? Do you hear these terms associated with it, like Internet of Things, Internet of Bodies, Internet of Humans, Internet of Senses, Internet of Nano Things? This world will be powered by 5G and 6G technology. You've heard them talk about creating digital twins, right? That's something I didn't even explore in the metaverse, and I need to do another piece on that itself, 6G and the digital twinning and the metaverse and all that. And of course, for Schwab and globalists, this means a world that is technocratic, central planning, top-down control, track and trace all transactions, have everybody on a digital ID on a blockchain that they can track, like a transparent, not a private, not decentralized blockchain, and where people who are anti-science or conspiracy theorists or whatever can be locked out via social credit scores. When Klaus Schwab announced this, he says, ubiquitous mobile supercomputing, intelligent robots, self-driving cars, neurotechnological brain enhancements, genetic editing, the experience of dramatic change is all around us and it's happening at an exponential speed. So he's been apparently working with the UAE to push the fourth industrial revolution for years. In one of his quotes, he basically said, I'd like to thank the minister for the great cooperation we have here with our Center for Fourth Industrial Revolution. And I'm very happy that we have assembled economists, sociologists, representative scientists who can enlighten us about all these new technologies. And again, there was another panel called The Next 50 Years. And you had His Excellency Omar bin Sultan Al Alama, the Minister of State for Artificial Intelligence, Digital Economy, and Remote Work Applications. That's a mouthful. And coincidentally, this guy is a partner with the World Economic Forum. And again, he also has been working with the government in the UAE to promote artificial intelligence and robotics. And part of this, I think, is economically, financially driven. They want to see themselves as, you know, they're coming into the modern era. They're going to be involved with all this digital technology. They're going to be, everybody wants to be the next Silicon Valley, basically. And I think that's how the UAE and Dubai are promoting themselves. Like, it's for the super wealthy. You know, you see people, the young, rich kids with their Lambos driving around and, you know, all the digitizing of the economy and everything. That's what we're witnessing. Now, I want to say this. Minister Al Alama also mentioned, here's a quote from him. He says, there isn't going to be two economies. He's talking about how hotels, taxis, and other industries were changed by digital technology and that inevitably, he believes, the economy is going to be digitized. Quote, we are right now at this inflection point where we can confidently say traditional economy and digital economy. But at one point in the near future, as the fourth industrial revolution becomes more mainstream, there is only going to be a digital economy. Or an economy, if it's not purely digital, is enabled by digital means. And he goes on to describe his country's investments in 5G, the fourth industrial revolution, you know, all this stuff. This is, you know, the reason we're outlining this is if you know about the Great Reset, then you need to know they're pushing it now to the narrative. It's time to restore trust, to rebuild trust. They know that the people are not, at least this is my interpretation, I believe they are recognizing this is sort of like an admission that the people are not fully buying into their paradigm and buying all their BS. And so they're really having to, you know, discuss like, okay, we need a new narrative. We need to create an all-encompassing narrative to unite the people behind so that we can build this world that we want, right? That's what they're pushing towards. So this discussion of artificial intelligence, the fourth industrial revolution, and a cashless digital society and the Great Reset are absolutely vital for you to comprehend. These unelected technocrats continue to host events and release reports to the people as if we're asking for their help and guidance. And they hide underneath a veneer of benevolence, but the facade is wearing thin and the people of the world are beginning to question the true mission of the World Economic Forum, the Gates Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, and similar players. And the last part of this article, which I do think is important, I don't want to just sit here and read you the whole thing. I really want you to go back and read this, especially this one. I put a lot of effort into this. It's about 3,000 words. It'll take you, I don't know, half an hour to an hour to really get into and comprehend, but I encourage you to do so. In this section about technocratic authoritarianism, I felt like it was worth making the point that, look, these people are promoting themselves as the benevolent, you know, they're here to save the day and fix the planet and all this stuff and make things inclusive and resilient and sustainable. And meanwhile, they're choosing to meet at the United Arab Emirates over there in the Middle East. If for those of us in the Western world, maybe it seems far away, you don't know much about it, never been there, don't know where it's at on the map, all those kinds of things, you might not know a lot about it. But one of the things you should know is that the United Arab Emirates has a horrible track record for human rights. They also have been known to deport people who renounce Islam. They have very limited press freedoms, and they enforce different elements of Sharia law. In 2020, the UAE announced the creation of a human rights council to address human rights issues, but critics accused the leadership of whitewashing the problem. And despite promises of change and relaxing of laws around alcohol and divorce, the UAE is struggling to maintain an image of a free nation. And in September of this year, European Union legislators called on the UAE to free several prominent human rights activists and other peaceful dissidents who've been imprisoned for years in their country. And these are people who are basically just speaking out about the politicians, speaking out about the ruling family, and have been given 10 years in prison. And nobody really believes that these trials they were put through were legit in any kind of way. But I just think that was worth You know, noting, like as I wrote here, in their vision of the future, you will own nothing and be happy as authoritarian nations like the UAE partner with big tech to monitor the population's use of carbon, electricity, and other resources while assigning a social credit score to determine your access to privileges like travel and work. This is the great narrative that the technocrats wish to imprint on our minds and hearts in this so-called decade of transformation. And the last thing I say here is, who will design the future, guys? That's the big thing to think about, right? They have their plans, but these aren't set in stone. The Klaus Schwabs of the world, they may have their visions and they're working to do their thing, right? They're going to do their thing. We're going to do our thing. But this is why we have the Greater Reset, the People's Reset, thegreaterreset.org, for those of you who haven't visited and seen what we're doing there. This is why we are countering their whole movement, because their plans aren't necessarily set in stone, right? They are putting it out there and telling everybody, hey, we need to be prepared. This is how we're going to approach. We're going to create a great narrative, right? Well, what does the people's narrative look like? What does your narrative look like? What's the narrative for your family, your friends, for your loved ones? For us, it's about, you know, building community. It's about liberating our body, mind, and soul, creating permaculture and food independence, taking back our tech from big tech, agorism, parallel networks, getting out of their systems. Like these are the narrative that we're focused on and that we're going to create. And I think that's where our mindset should be. It is important to know what they're doing. That's why I write articles like this. That's why I spend my time doing these investigations. But we also need to have our own vision, our own plan. And that's what the greater reset, the people's reset is all about. And I hope you guys will check that out. Now let's continue. I'll try to keep this next part a little shorter. I appreciate everybody who's listening. And again, you can bookmark all my work at theconsciousresistance.com. You can find my writing at thelastamericanvagabond.com under Derek Bro's section. This second part is called The Great Narrative and the Metaverse. Part two, will the metaverse end human freedom? And Ryan put this really awesome image in here. It's got like the matrixy look going on over the top of what looks like a prison. That is the panopticon, actually, where you can see all around it. So this is focused now on the metaverse. We talked about the fourth industrial revolution and what was the great narrative. It was a two-day meeting where they discussed the push for the next stage of the great reset, the great narrative, and they're going to release a book about it. But they also mentioned a few times the metaverse. They didn't go super deep into it, but what I wrote here was that the concepts of the fourth industrial revolution and the metaverse are inextricably linked. This article is a brief exploration of the concept and the companies attempting to bring the virtual universe to life. And there really is so much more I could have done in this article now that I'm thinking about it. I definitely need to write another article on the digital twinning and the 6G. But this one is just, I think, an intro to where I'm going to go with in the future. And I do want to give credit and a shout out to Whitney Webb, because Whitney sent me a few, kind of threads to pull on and to check out as I was doing this research. And it was very helpful. So let's understand the metaverse. The vast majority of the public is probably only aware of this term because Facebook, the company Facebook Inc., recently announced they were changing their company name to Meta. So now Meta owns Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, etc. But the company that started Facebook is now known as Meta. And Mark Zuckerberg has been making the rounds, pushing for how we need to move humanity into the virtual world known as the metaverse, which looks really crappy. I mean, it just looks like crap. There's not much to it. The stuff that we've seen released, it looks like some Sims thing from back in the day, Nintendo 64 or something. It's not really that great. I don't see very many people getting too excited about it, but I do think that it's clear there's a push towards that. And I also want to say this just briefly. This has been something that's kind of conflicting to me, because as a child of the 90s who went to arcades when I was a little kid and would play arcades, and I remember the first attempts at virtual reality arcade games. And it was like a thing where you would go in this big area and it was like a tent and it was all dark and you had to wear these giant goggles and you could go in there and you were doing like a first person shooter, but with some goggles on. And I just remember always thinking like, wow, it's going to be so cool. In the future, we're going to be able to be in the games and playing it. And I think that could still be very fun and cool in a way. That doesn't mean I want to abandon my human body or that I hate living in, the real reality, or I'm going to plug into the Matrix. But I just think it sucks that there's some really interesting technologies developing and we know they're going to be used in dangerous ways. And honestly, can we really trust any of these companies? I mean, who knows, right? You remember that one Batman with Jim Carrey back in the day, and they had this device that they were giving to people, and it was secretly like sucking their brains out and their knowledge and turning them into zombies. But it was also you know, a trippy new thing to do. Anyways, I'm getting lost here. But I think that it's hard to trust really what they're going to do in these different tools while also understanding that there could be some cool applications. Doesn't mean I'm endorsing it. Before somebody goes and cuts that clip out of context and says, oh, Derek Rose endorsed the metaverse. Anyways, in July, Mark Zuckerberg explained his plans for the metaverse in an interview with The Verge, stating that he imagines a future where people are wearing eyeglasses or contacts, which show a virtual reality where they can interact with friends and the environment. And I don't really want to quote from Mark Zuckerberg too much, but he says, the metaverse isn't just virtual reality, but it's a persistent, synchronous environment where we can be together using virtual reality, augmented reality, personal computers, mobile devices, and gaming consoles. He says he hopes the metaverse will not only be some kind of a hybrid between the social platforms we see today, but an environment where you are embodied in it. And also, Facebook CEO, now Meta CEO, Sheryl Sandberg told the New York Times that one day, people will host religious services in virtual reality spaces and use augmented reality as an educational tool to teach their children the story of their faith. While much of this is being said about the name change, the potential of the metaverse, what it might be, the name comes from a book that I've been reading recently. Some of you might be familiar with. It's a science fiction book called Snow Crash. And in Snow Crash, the main character, hero protagonist, exists in a futuristic landscape where people hop in and out of the alternative universe made up of augmented reality and virtual reality. And obviously, Snow Crash isn't the first book to kind of explore this, but it was the first one to coin the term metaverse. And here's where the first metaverse was ever said from Snow Crash. And it says from the book, "So Hero's not actually here at all. He's in a computer-generated universe that his computer is drawing onto his goggles and pumping into his earphones. In this lingo, this imaginary place is known as the metaverse. Hero spends a lot of time in the metaverse." And so, obviously, critics are really concerned about this. Like, yeah, let's get the World Economic Forum and Mark Zuckerberg and all these kinds of people and just hand them the keys to our world and turn it all digital, and I'm sure it'll be great. And I'm pretty sure I make this this point here in the article somewhere, but I can easily see the propaganda coming now. I mean, we're seeing it with the climate stuff, but that, how long do you think until they're going to say the planet is better if you're living in the metaverse? There's no viruses in the metaverse, right? Like, these kinds of things, I can easily see that working on the younger generations, not only because of the appeal or the excitement of, oh, look at this, it's a digital avatar, and we all like playing video games. That's fun, right? You can be anything, and especially if you don't like yourself here, you don't have to be yourself. You can just live somewhere else. But then they're like, "And you're good. You know, you can get your virtue signaling while going on while participating in the metaverse, right? And you're not going to harm Mother Earth and all that." I can see that propaganda coming on for sure. And there is actually, I reference here a piece from Counterpunch that I recommend reading because it does a good job of exposing this as well. But what I said here is that the public will likely be fed the narrative that being in the metaverse is better for the planet, or there are no viruses to fear. And of course, the potential, now this is really scary, the potential for a digital virus to infect the hardware and the software of the metaverse, as well as the minds of the people who are jacked in, is more than a little bit terrifying. Like, what does a virus in the metaverse look like? You can get a virus on your computer and it can really mess things up, right? But what if you're plugged into the metaverse and somebody hacks the metaverse, infects them? I don't know. That's right. Maybe it just malfunctions, but maybe it could be something deeper. If you haven't seen the movie 2009 Hollywood film Surrogates, I encourage you to at least check it out just as a interesting example of what could be. Bruce Willis plays an FBI agent investigating the death involving a surrogate, which is a humanoid avatar that people choose to live in rather than their own bodies. And it's a little different because their metaverse, or their sort of alternative reality, is a digital place you go to. Well, it's a different place that you can live in, but it's by putting yourself in these other alternative physical bodies, right? It's not completely digital. In the metaverse, the avatar is a digital being, but the end result is the same. Most people choose to live in their surrogates rather than in their real human bodies. Is this what we're going to see with the metaverse? And time will tell. Now, I want to pull up a couple of different points because I know some of you guys like to get into the nuts and bolts of, well, who's behind this and who's doing this? Sometimes I think we're spinning our wheels, making these maps and really trying to understand this. I think it's useful for investigative purposes, but I don't know. I digress. Either way, I did do some digging into who's bringing this metaverse to life. And according to the mainstream, there's five main companies: Google, Microsoft, Apple, Valve, and Magic Leap. Valve, I might write about for a different article, but the main one I focused on is Magic Leap. Those are probably less known than Google, Microsoft, and Apple. Magic Leap has been around for about 10 years, and They basically say that their goal is to bring the metaverse to life. And they are at the moment focused on bringing it to the corporate world, and then they hope eventually mass consumer adoption. So they even have the guy who wrote Snow Crash, Neil Stephenson, as their chief futurist. And he works with the tech sector to bring the metaverse concept to life. So I thought that was interesting. This guy's working with this company. Maybe there's something to this company. Magic Leap was founded in 2010 with the goal of bringing augmented reality and virtual reality to the masses. In 2017, Magic Leap launched their mixed reality goggles with the hopes of finally launching into the metaverse. However, as with previous other attempts like Facebook's Oculus Rift, Google Glass, and Microsoft HoloLens, these concepts haven't been successful. They haven't really taken off. People aren't rushing to the stores to buy them. So they were pretty much seen as like a dead and gone company, failing. By late 2019 and June 2020, they went from being valued at $6.4 billion to just under $450 million, which is a loss of 93%. And by most accounts, they were seen as a failure. And then, out of nowhere, and this is kind of interesting, October 2021, Magic Leap receives $500 million from an unidentified source, which they say is now going to like reinvigorate the company and help bring them back to life. And they are focusing their investments on delivering best-in-class augmented reality solutions, including a new device called Magic Leap 2 by 2022. And Magic Leap CEO Peggy Johnson said the investment is, quote, an important step in advancing Magic Leap's mission to transform the way we work. Now, she's an interesting character. She joined the company in August 2020 after working with Microsoft. She worked at Microsoft as the Executive Vice President of Business Development from September 2014 till August 2020 when she left to go to Magic Leap, which is actually a competitor of Microsoft, or at least that's what we're told. And when she was involved at Microsoft, she was actually involved in Microsoft's partnership with the ID 2020 project that many of you might be familiar with. She's even quoted as being on the front page of the ID 2020 website. If you don't know about ID 2020, I reported on this way back in, I think, 2018 or 2019, way before we heard about COVID, guys. We could see that, you know what, the vaccines, the shots are going to be a big part of the agenda. They're saying everybody needs to get a shot, everybody needs to get a digital ID. The partners of the ID 2020 project, which again is an attempt to get every single person on the planet some form of digital identification, the partners include Microsoft, Gavi, which is the Global Vaccine Alliance funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and the Rockefeller Foundation. Think about that. Microsoft, Gavi, and the Rockefeller Foundation, the Gates. Those are the people funding the ID 2020 project. That's who Peggy Johnson was collaborating with during her time at Microsoft. It was during her tenure at Microsoft that a formal partnership with the ID 2020 project was actually announced at the World Economic Forum, the people pushing the great narrative. Wow, it seems like they all run in the same circles. While making the announcement, Johnson noted, it was last summer that Microsoft took a first step collaborating with Accenture and Avanade on a blockchain-based identity prototype on Microsoft Azure. And then I included a tweet here from her back in January 2018 talking about ID 2020. Interestingly enough, she also sits on the board of directors of BlackRock, which she has held since March 2018. You guys might know about BlackRock coming under fire in the last year for real estate investments. Also, they have stock in Moderna. Of course, Moderna involved in COVID. So this lady is a real interesting character, working on the ID 2020 project, working with BlackRock, Microsoft, now working on Magic Leap to bring the metaverse to life. You know, I don't know what else to say about her or what she's involved in, but I did go to her LinkedIn page and see her kind of bragging about all the things they've done. And let's give you some examples of what they say. Here's just some non-scary, non-conspiratorial ways that they say Magic Leap and augmented reality and virtual reality is going to change the world. They say they've partnered with Ericsson to improve work floor processes on factory floors and to increase efficiency and collaboration. Ophthalmologists at Heru used our technology to develop an AR solution for eye exams, replacing a costly and cumbersome diagnostic machine with a more affordable vision diagnostic tool. And Farmers Insurance used Magic Leap to remotely train newly hired claims adjusters. So they're basically saying, look, here's some kind of mundane, regular, whatever, non-scary uses of it. That may be the case, but I found an interview with Johnson where she also talks about stakeholder capitalism, which is another important component to the fourth industrial revolution, to the great reset, the great narrative, and all this crap. This is a web of technocrats. Meta, Microsoft, Google, Apple, the World Economic Forum, Amazon, Magic Leap, Gavi, ID 2020, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation. I mean, it's all in here, guys. That's my two-part investigation into the great narrative in the metaverse. If you haven't read it, I encourage you to go check it out. The lastamericanvagabond.com, guys. I put a lot of effort into writing these, and I encourage you to share them. Please, a lot of people seem to have forgotten that social media is meant for sharing, sharing ideas, sharing important info. If you found this valuable, please support the work of The Last American Vagabond by sharing our content, sharing my work. If you support my work, you can visit theconsciousresistance.com/invest, and you can support us for the moment at Patreon and buy me a coffee, and through crypto. Soon, it will only be through crypto and sending cash to the P.O. box, but if you want to support however you can, sharing is always appreciated. And I'll remind you one last time, we have the Greater Reset coming up in January 26th to the 30th, in-person events in Austin and Morelia, Mexico. Our theme is integration. We have a lot of speakers. We've only announced about 16 of them. We've got at least 20 more to announce, 34 speakers in total. It's going to be free online. Come in person in Mexico if you can. Come in person in Texas. Have local watch parties. Get involved. Get organized. Because no, their plans are not set in stone. We still get to decide where we're going and what the future looks like. We're writing that future right now. So I encourage you, create your own narrative, create your own reset, create your own vision of this decade of transformation. Don't give in to their crap and realize that we have the power to direct the future of humanity. Thank you guys so much for listening. This has been Derek Brose of the Conscious Resistance Network. As always, remember, you are powerful, you are beautiful, and you are free. Peace.